During the 3 decades of Ba'athist rule in Iraq, the government there inflicted a series of atrocities on its people. As the trial of Saddam Hussein unfolds in the upcoming months, Iraqis will begin to confront their nation's troubled past. The Iraq Memory Foundation archives documentation of those atrocities which took place under the Ba'athist regime. One of their aims is to aid in the healing process of Iraqi citizens who lived during that difficult period. We'd like you to join the conversation. Tell us whether you think confronting truths, even difficult ones, helps in the healing process. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Hassan Namneh. He's Director of Documentation at the Iraq Memory Foundation. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the Iraq Memory Foundation. How did this project get underway?
Well, it is... there are more than one way to deal with an experience such as the traumatic past, the few decades that Iraqi society had had to deal with. One approach would be the truth and reconciliation process that had been undertaken in
South Africa.
Another would be simply to pretend that nothing has happened or to turn the page and to move on. This is the resolution of the civil war in Lebanon was that way.
Mm-hmm.
In a certain sense, what the Memory Foundation aims at is to provide Iraqi society with options in order for it to figure out within those two extremes which level of scrutiny, which level of examination of that past is needed in order to make sure that civil society institutions will hold their government accountable in the future, meaning monitoring, if you'd like, potential red flags that might emerge about the behavior of the government in order not to let the culture of complicity that the previous government had basically created in Iraq allow for a resumption of the kind of totalitarianism that we have seen.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to the culture of complicity in just a minute, but I obviously the situation now in Iraq, people are have so much trouble with their daily lives, you'd have to think that there would have to be some period of first some peace and then a period for people to catch their breaths before they even start to make these kinds of decisions about how they want to revisit their past.
Absolutely. This is a long-term project. It is not, this is not an instant gratification type of activity. It is something that actually envisages a decade-long approach towards facing the issue. However, actually, part of the documentation work at the Memory Foundation does have immediate implications. I mean, whether it's providing support along very strict guidelines, for that matter, guidelines that basically ensure that there is no abuse of it to the special tribunal, but also we have tens of thousands of missing persons, and basically a survey of the available documentation can help determine the fate of those missing persons. And also, there is an ongoing process of vetting potential regime officials who would like to go back into public life, and lots of the documentation might allow. Again, I mean, our function is one of enabling rather than of doing, along the lines that we have the documentation, we have the systems, we have the procedures. What we're trying to do is inviting Iraqi society, represented by its civil society institutions as well as by its elected government, to choose which one of those tools it's likely to use.
And where did these documents come from?
Originally, our project actually started in the aftermath of the 1991 Gulf War. Most of the documents that we had at that point were collected in the north of Iraq and in Kuwait by either opposition parties, meaning the Kurdish insurgency parties at that point, or the U.S. military, as in the case of Kuwait. And ultimately, after many years of insisting on getting them, we were provided with these documents, and we basically started the whole process of developing systems in anticipation of what would come next, which is once the regime falls, we will be able to look, meaning use that sample in order to look at the inner workings of that regime and the way it ended up victimizing the individual by making that individual complicit in that whole process of controlling society.
Some of this material was used for published material by Kanan Makiya, who's involved in the Memory Project, one of its source of inspiration for it. And this material, going back to the Anfal campaign, there was mention of that earlier in the program, a campaign waged against the Kurdish people in northern Iraq. Extraordinary records were kept of torture, of murder.
Absolutely, and very often, though, and this is the delicate part in it. Very often, using euphemisms throughout, meaning in order for us to be able to figure out, meaning to establish a pattern of criminality, we have first and foremost to understand the language used by the regime, to understand the mindset that the regime promoted, that the kind of institutions it has promoted, and this is why, meaning in a certain sense, it is unlikely that one smoking gun is going to be found that links Saddam to anything in particular. It's more establishing those structures, those patterns, through a careful reading of all the material.
Weight of all the evidence. If you'd like to join the conversation again, 800-989-8255. Let's speak with Sherry, who's on the phone with us from Chicago.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling because I wanted to tell you something about a friend of mine named Eva Moses Kaur, who she's a survivor of Auschwitz and a survivor of Dr. Mengele's medical experiments, twin experiments in Auschwitz. She has sort of experienced over the decades of her life since then of dealing or not dealing with it in different ways. For at first, she and her sister, who had been twins in the camp together, didn't even talk about it for 40 years, not even to each other. But they both had a lot of, they tried to put it behind them, but they had a lot of psychological problems as well as, you know, some of the physical problems they were left with. And I think it helped Eva very much when she started telling her story in the mid-1980s and trying to do more research to learn more about what had happened. And then eventually she made the decision to forgive the Nazis. This has caused a lot of controversy among some of the other survivors. But for her, she has seen it as very liberating that she feels that she felt very powerful. She said that she had the power to decide to forgive or to not forgive. And that made her feel that she had power over the Nazis who had previously had so much power over her. And it has been a very, very healing experience for her. She doesn't mean by it, she's been real impressed actually by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I think that was one of her inspirations for it. So I just wanted to call and let you know about that.
Sherry, thank you very much, and it's an interesting point. And Hassan, it's obviously 40 years, it may be 40 years before many in Iraq begin to come to terms with what they experienced, or indeed, in some cases, what they did.
25 million, there are 25 million ways to figure out how to get out of that trauma. A trauma, indeed, of being a victim or being a perpetrator. I think in a certain sense, this is indeed at the core of what we're doing. Inviting people to, on an individual basis, to figure out the path to that they would use towards that, meaning that the purpose of the Memory Foundation is not to impose a preconceived solution or a preconceived approach, but to make those approaches, including exactly, if it's forgiveness, it's forgiveness. If it is seeking justice, we're hoping that there will be mechanisms within the future for that justice to be sought. Ultimately, it is a personal choice, and it is a choice that has to be made at the level of a discussion in society.
We're speaking with Hassan Nemne of the Iraq Memory Foundation. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's another caller on the line. This is Taylor, who's with us from Spearfish, South Dakota.
Hi, yes, I enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
I was calling to wonder if there's any plan to incorporate the knowledge of these atrocities into the school curriculum so you don't end up with ignorant generations such as has been noted as a problem in Japan.
Absolutely. This is indeed, actually, we are at the stage of collecting the information and synthesizing this information into knowledge. But beyond the knowledge, indeed, there is the action part that is required. And while I did mention 25 million paths, but also actually we have to think in terms of the future generations. And one main component is exactly to try to get to a negotiated narrative, negotiated national narrative. I mean, what we are concerned about is that without facing that past in heads on, in a way that makes it possible to discuss it openly, what we end up with is many factional narratives of we were the victims, they were the victimizers, and we won't, meaning we, in a certain sense, Iraqi society won't be able to get to the point of developing a more nuanced understanding of its past. Absolutely, meaning many components of these atrocities are going to be hopefully included in the curriculum. At least this is what we're going to be advocating.
right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Taylor. In line with that question, and again, you're not trying to impose solutions on Iraqis, but important decisions have to be made. Are you also providing Iraqis with information, or do you plan to provide Iraqis with information about some of the alternatives that you mentioned, for example, South Africa's decision, or the Lebanese decision, or clearly Germany after the Second World War, not just Germany, but Japan, as Taylor mentioned, and Austria, of course, as well?
The fact of the matter, we are not neutral. I mean, we're trying to be objective, we're trying to be, if you'd like, impartial in it, but we are not neutral. We do have a point of view, and the point of view is that in order for us to be able to deal with the future, we have to confront the past. And accordingly, indeed, part of our plan is to the Memory Foundation to have a center that would be a combination interactive research center / museum / resource for individual Iraqis to go there and to try to seek to see whatever that has happened to them, to their families, and beyond. Meaning the idea is that we in order to have a discussion at a social level that includes all those options, the pros and the cons, we need to be able to have not just theoretical tools, but also practical ones. And this is the stage that we are currently at. We're developing those tools.
Here's another caller. Soraya is with us in San Jose, California.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Finally, a program on Anfal, a genocide that we've been trying to talk about for many years as a Kurdish American. I just wanted to mention, I was hearing another caller talk about how forgiveness might be a way to go. I just would like to point out to your listeners and to you that Kurds have actually in the past in Iraq many times decided to forgive and trusted another Arab government, and another genocide came about. And unfortunately, we are asked to do the same over again. And right now, we are asked to just basically trust another government in Baghdad and go with it. And these wounds are so fresh. And I've personally lost family members during that campaign, extended family members. And I believe that if you really want to make an impact, you need to bring the whole Arab world into this. The complicity is not only the Iraqi Arabs. Arab ultranationalism basically believes, and in 1963, Ba'ath Party, and it's their belief that they are the superior race and that Kurds don't belong there and they would like to exterminate them. Now, those are constitutionalized. It doesn't matter if it's in Syria or Iraq. And at the same time, our president goes to Turkey in a place where genocide is happening today. We have cultural genocide and prisons and torture, and talks about how that is a democracy. So those wounds will not be healed if we, Americans and the world community, ask the Kurds to again go through the same experience possibly.
I'm sorry to cut you off, sorry, Soraya, but I wanted to give an opportunity for a response for Hassan. We just have a few seconds left.
I thank the caller actually for her comment. Indeed, there is a dark side to any nationalism, and in a certain sense, this invitation is not limited to the Iraqi setting. It's not limited to Iraqi society. Within Iraqi society, it is not limited to the Arab component or to the Kurdish component. We're trying at the same time actually to consider those issues. Indeed, there has been, because of talking about groups of people as if they were an organic unity, we say the Arabs, the Kurds, etc., we often forget the individual. Actually, one major one major purpose of our work is to focus on the individual and not on the group.
Well, if groups are involved, obviously, as we heard earlier in this program, the United States and other Western countries looked the other way during some of the chemical attacks in Iraq. Perhaps that requires some reconciliation as well in some form. Hassan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hassan Namneh, Director of Documentation Project for the Iraq Memory Foundation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.